because I had some feedback from several folks, and I kind of want to go back and clarify. I need to tell you all, like I said, the Song of Solomon is a book that talks about what our relationship should look like. And when we read the Song of Solomon, we should be embarrassed when we see the standard that God has, how what we do and what we have doesn't even come close to meeting what God has. That's the way it should be. This is God's standard, and it's way above what you and I can attain. Even as if you and I try and come up with doctrine, we're not going to compare it with God's standard in Romans. If you and I try and build a church, it's not going to look like the church in Ephesians. We're going to fall short. And what I don't want to do is depress some of you. Like, I will never find anybody like this. Well, you may not find somebody like this. Don't look so much for perfection as you look for direction. Okay? I don't want some of you guys and gals going out here looking for the fourth person of the Trinity to get into a relationship with. All right? That probably won't happen. I wouldn't be married today if I was looking for that. Not because I didn't find it, but because she didn't, and she married me anyway. But what Alex saw, hopefully, was a person who was pursuing a direction to become like this shepherd king. So as we talk about this stuff, I'm not going to lower the standard. I'm going to talk about it just like it's in here. And we're going to continue looking about the things that attract them just so we can get through that. And then we're going to see that that gang is what you should look for. And you're not going to find it consistently in anybody. But you should find a person who's committed to heading in that direction. All right? We left off in chapter 2, verse 2, is where we've kind of finished. And we talked about how we've seen lots of things. We saw how it was verse 10 before the guy even brought out anything that referred to the looks of the women. It was verse 15 before the woman even mentioned anything that refers to the way the man appeared. That character was a lot more important than their appearance. Remember that bodies deteriorate, but persons develop. And as you guys look for people, and specifically in this instance, male-female relationships, you've got to get our eyes off the things that we value so much that aren't the things that are really to be valued. Persons and bodies deteriorate and persons develop. That's where you're looking for that person that's going to start to blossom and look more like this shepherd king that this young girl is in love with. And we saw how as they came together, the girl was insecure and how the man nurtured her and built into her and told her things, was tender toward her. And we saw how she responded to where she began to care about herself. There's a theory in psychology that deals with self-esteem that's called the significant other's theory. And this is true. Tell me if this isn't true. The significant other's theory is basically that your self-esteem is built up based on how other people that are significant in your life see you. And as this woman who made Solomon her significant other, or one of them, when Solomon treated her in a way, and we go back to chapter 1, and we see the way that Solomon said a lot of nice things about her in verses 9, 10, and following, we saw that she responded in a way that she started to believe that about herself. It was her who said, "I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of the field." That's after in chapter 1, verse 6, she said, "I am swarthy. I am black." And she didn't like the way she appeared, but something about her significant other loving her the way this book says we should love changed her ability to care for herself. Let me ask you this and see if this isn't also true. Your self-esteem is not what you think you are. Okay? Or let me just do it this way. It'll make it more sense. How I like myself isn't really made up of who I think I am. Likewise, my self-esteem is not me. It's not what you think I am. My self-esteem is what I think you think I am. You guys with me on that? That's why it's so important. And as we look through here in Song of Solomon, we see how these people communicate. And they don't leave it out there to be a great mystery. You don't have to wonder what that person thinks. He's telling her. He goes and he starts, and we made light of the fact that he called her the mare of Pharaoh. Okay, he pulls his chariot and talked about why that was a big deal to him. And he told her that. He didn't just expect her to believe it by the way he treated her. He told her that. And we saw his love increase, and he told her eventually in chapter 2, verse 2, "You're not just like a good horse among good horses. You are like a lily among thorns. You are just unbelievable." And we saw the way their love toward each other increased. Okay? All those things ought to be present in a good relationship. One last thing, one last disclaimer as we get started. And that is this. I know that some of you are not, you may think, "Well, golly, I don't need a relationship," or "I'm not in a relationship," or "I don't want to have this thing offered in front of me. I'll be depressed by what might be out there." This is God's standard. It is good for you. If you're a person who is content in your singleness, great. You're right where God wants you. Alright? And what the purpose of going through this is not to make you see what you're missing. Okay? But it is to encourage you to never settle for anything less. I believe, I was talking to somebody this week, and we were talking about the gift of singleness. I believe that every one of you in here has the gift of singleness. Just as I now have the gift of marriage. I want to tell you something. Until April 20th, 1991, I did not have the gift of marriage. I had the gift of singleness. Some of you guys say, I've got the gift of singleness, but I ain't going to open it. All right? That's all right. Don't open it if you don't want to open it, but use it while you've got it. You better open it because God has given it to you and you've got it right now. Why? Because you're single. He's obviously made you that way. He obviously has you that way. And if you're in God's will and God asks you to do something, He will give you everything that you need to be successful at what He's called you to be. He has called most of you to be single because you're not married. So you've got what it takes to be a successful single. The purpose of going through this is not to make you regret the fact that you're single. It is to encourage you to never settle for anything less if He leads you in another direction. If you do have that gift, it is to encourage you to never let your friends settle for anything less. Or they will wish they had that gift of singleness. Okay? Because they'll be miserable in their gift of marriage. Like we talked about, loneliness is not just a problem with singles. There are more lonely marriages in this church probably than there are lonely singles. It is work. Chapter 2, verse 3. Well, then why? Yes, Sharon? Okay. Good and loud so they can hear. That's a great question. That's like saying, you hear her question? If this is the example of what love should be, why did Solomon go on to have as many as 1,000 other wives, which 1 Kings chapter 4 tells us he did? And is this his first wife? Both good questions. Let me answer them like this. First of all, to say that this is not a good image of love because Solomon went on to be a great adulterer, to take many wives and have many concubines. In fact, later on, we get later in the book, we'll see that he makes reference to 60 or a large number of queens. I think it's 60 queens and 40 concubines. And why would this guy who's a great lover make reference to 60 queens and 40 concubines? We'll talk about that and answer that when we get there. But to say that this is not a good picture of love because Solomon went on to blow it is to say that Proverbs is not a good book of wisdom because Solomon went on to be a fool. Whether or not he applied this continually throughout his life or not is really not even a debate. He obviously didn't. But Solomon didn't go on to live like the book of Proverbs either. He was the wisest man that ever lived. God gave him knowledge that would surpass all people that would ever come, and he died a man who wrote a book called Ecclesiastes, which just talked about the folly of life, especially the folly of pursuing all these things but not applying them to your life. Solomon had a love which was an inspired love, a great love, a godly love, a standard that was to be matched, but he didn't hang on to it. And just because we know stuff, wisdom is knowledge applied. Many of you guys know a guy named Dr. Howard Hendricks. And Hendricks tells a story of a friend of his who was a worldwide cancer specialist. He studied the effects of tobacco on lung cancer. And this guy smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day. He said, I know this is going to kill me. And Hendricks says, and it did. So gang, as you look at this stuff, Solomon knew that if he didn't keep his love like this, if he didn't chase away the foxes of the vineyard, which we're going to talk about today, they could destroy the beauty of the blossom of their marriage. And it did, apparently. There are many. If you pick up the Song of Solomon and you pick up commentaries on this book, you can read 6 different books and get 6 different opinions about when this book took place in Solomon's life. You can find out different opinions on whether it was a drama, whether it was whether it was actually Solomon was the lover, or whether it was a shepherd boy and Solomon was trying to steal this bride away from the shepherd boy. But you've got to just, kind of resolve those issues as you study the book yourself. I take the position that this was a book that was written early in Solomon's life, that it was probably the first book that he wrote. It was a book that he wrote like a young boy who falls in love, and that when he concerns himself with the things of love, and as the guy matures, he writes about the things of wisdom. And as a man gets old, and that's where he wrote Proverbs, and as a man gets older, he writes about how all things are folly, except knowing your Maker. And so I kind of believe that that's the order of Solomon's writings in the Bible. I believe it makes sense. I believe that we see Solomon here experiencing great love, and I see him forsaking it. And I think you'll see him write about the despair of forsaking that great love in his later books. I think he knew from experience when he wrote to not go to the woman of folly, because I think he knew that a man could not take fire in his bosom and not be burned. All right? Chapter 2, verse 3. Here's what this guy is like. He's like an apple tree among the trees of the forest. Remember, we're talking about character. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. In his shade I took great delight and sat down, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He has brought me... Oh, let's stop right there in verse 3. Let's take a look now. Remember, we're continuing the character of the king, continuing the character of the lover, Solomon. And what Solomon is doing here, and listen, this is the woman talking about her lover, like an apple tree among the trees of the forest. Did anybody grow up here in the country? Or better yet, in the woods, in a wooded area? I grew up in St. Louis. Yeah, you did? Andy, when you just kind of run around walking through a forest, how many apple trees did you bump into? Zero. All right? If you are walking through Sherwood Forest, it's not just by chance oak, elm, you know, redwood, this, that. Apple tree. Mango. You know, it's just not there. Okay? It's a surprise. She is walking through a forest. And remember what he just said? You are like a lily among thorns. And she says, you are like an apple tree in the middle of a dense forest. You are in the middle of this wood. All he makes paper. You are fruit. You are life to me. And she says, you are a special. And you're surprised. You're just different. You to me are something that among all the men that make up the woods, you are special. And so she's kind of returning to him what she just received from him. So is my beloved a young man. In his shade I took great delight and sat down. Just turn back, if you can, to chapter 1, verse 5. And let's read it. Remember she said, I'm black and lovely? Remember she said that not to stare at me because I am swarthy, for the sun has burned me? What she is doing right here is she is going through, and formerly, what formerly hurt her, she found protection from in this man. We're going to spend a little bit of time on this because what she is saying is when I look at Solomon, when I get to this guy, he protects me from harm. That which formerly hurt me is gone under the love of this man. We're going to look at it later, but it is in the Jewish wedding ceremony, what used to happen is they didn't exchange rings. In fact, I did not know this, but the exchanging of rings is a fairly recent phenomenon. I was having dinner with a bunch of older people in the church here Friday night. And I was laughing because none of them wore rings. In fact, Bob Smith, who's one of our elders in here, who doesn't wear a ring, I know a lot of you girls think, well, hey, this guy's really hard up. What's he still doing hanging around in here, you know? And he's not hard up. He's got a beautiful wife, Jenny. But I asked him, why don't you wear a ring? And then we went around the room, and it came to be that a lot of these folks, when they got married, it was not accustomed to exchange rings. I never knew that. What used to be the custom, and it wasn't for them, but way back when, okay, they got married after this, believe me. But what used to be the custom in a Jewish wedding ceremony is the man would take off his coat and he would put it around the woman. And the reason he would do that, it was a symbol of protection. I will take you underneath me, and I will be like a mother hen who gathers her chicks under her wings. I will protect you, and I will be somebody that gives you sustenance and somebody who protects you from what is beating you down before, and I will take you in and provide for you. And this woman is saying that this guy loves me, and his love is that which protects me from that which formerly made me unbeautiful. Let me tell you something that is hard, really, really difficult. I met with a guy who was he's a doctor, PhD, and is teaching a seminar, like we mentioned this before, on how to love in the 90s is what he kind of titles it. And he talked about how the problem that a lot of people have is they will reproduce. As much as we don't want to admit it, we will end up marrying somebody like our mom if we're a guy, and somebody like our dad if we're a girl. And he said, we don't like to believe it, but study after study after study confirms it. And some of you are thinking, whoa, I will not marry somebody like my dad. I will not marry a girl like my mom. Let me tell you, he gave three reasons why people typically do that. He said there's a good, there's a neutral, and there's a bad. The first one, the good reason is that we subconsciously, we go back and number one, we're used to being treated that way. We go to what's familiar, okay? We're used to it. That's the neutral one. Because we're used to being treated like a swarthy individual, some of you. I'm used to being yelled at by an alcoholic, some of you. I'm used to being abused and neglected by a man, some of you. I don't think I'm cherished. I don't think I'm valuable because my significant other never valued and cherished me, so that's what I expect, and so I don't hold out for anything different. That's his neutral one. His good one is because subconsciously we get back into these relationships or people that represent these relationships we've been in the past because we try and undo that which was formerly done. We try and get in there and rework it and fix it and get in a relationship with a person like that and work and work and work so that we can fix the conflict that we had in our youth. The bad one is because we believe that we are trash and that we do not deserve better. We don't just go there because we're familiar. We go there because I am swarthy, and so I can never hold out for a king like this. You see what this woman did? She held out. Even though she thought that she was not beautiful, even though that she thought she wasn't deserving of the love of the king, something changed in her life where she was committed to waiting for it. And I know that some of you girls in here have experienced things in the past to where you feel like I could never have a godly Christian man, a man who is stayed chaste, a man who has refused to participate in the lust of his flesh, and that's hard for a guy. Why would he ever want me? Because I have blown it. Gang, the truth is none of us are pure. None of us are pure except for the love of Jesus Christ. Not one. And I remember I was talking to a group of kids a long time, several years ago, and we were doing a deal on sex and dating, and a little girl raised her hand. And she knew that you know, in the course of this, it had come out that several of us on the panel were virgins. And she raised her hand. It was a bunch of girls, and the guys were on the panel. She raised her hand, and she goes, "Could you marry a girl?" And she was crying, who was no longer pure, who had lost her virginity. And the answer is absolutely yes. I'm not looking for perfection. I'm looking for direction. Because for me to say that that person is less than me when they have gone and they have dealt with that and repented from that and pursued a lifestyle of holiness, after they've made that mistake, for me to say that that is not good enough for me is to say that I need more than God. Now, there are some results, there are some scars, there are some problems that you personally have to deal with as you participate in that kind of lifestyle. And it's not like it's permanently erased. You've got to deal with that and process that, and your lover has to process that stuff with you. But that does not mean that once you are trash, you are always trash. That is the lie that is whispered in your ear. What are you waiting for? You already blew it. Make the most of the rest of your time. You may as well enjoy this because you're never going to get that. Don't buy it. I don't care if you've been burnt by the sun. Pray for a man that will protect you with a shade. Don't settle for less. Do not settle for less. And his fruit was sweet to my taste. His fruit was sweet to my taste. What is going on out here is he's talking about the fact, she's saying that what you bring forth, that which blossoms from your life, you are the tree, and what produces from your life is sweet to me. Real quickly, let's just do a little gut check. Turn to Galatians 5. As you get into a relationship, and by the way, I want to qualify this, not just a relationship girl-guy, although that is obviously the implication here, but I want to ask you this. Are your friends, Galatians chapter 5, experiencing sweet fruit from your life? As people watch you, and as people go and become your friend, and they rest under the shade of your apple tree, what do they experience? Do they experience this first little resume? Look at verse 19. Now the deeds, you could substitute fruit in there, it's the same word. Now the fruits of your flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned that those who practice these things shall not inherit the word of God. I mean, the kingdom of God. Some of you are going, how does he know who I'm dating? You know? All right? Some of you go, whoa, how does this guy know who I'm spending my time with? Or, I can't believe they wrote that about my mom or dad in here. How do they know about this? Some of you all, I just described you, or described what you used to be like. Better yet. And what the point is you do give off fruit. I don't care what you're doing, what kind of tree you are, you're giving off fruit. It's either the 19 through 21, or it's 22 through 24. But the fruit of the Spirit, the apple tree, is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control. Did I just describe you? Did I describe girls, the guy that you're dating? guys, did I describe the girl that you're dating? Or let's go back up top. Does this sound more familiar? Outbursts of anger, jealousy, disputes, immorality. Is the person you're dating an apple tree in the middle of a forest, or are they poison? Question, and better question, what are you? Are you an apple tree waiting for a person walking through the forest to bump into it? Or are you a tree that's got poison? And those things are poison, gang. And I want to tell you again, let me say this here. I am prone to outbursts of anger. I am prone to dissension. I am prone to argue. I am not the fourth member of the Trinity. I am not, you know, as I read this with Alex, I am embarrassed. And I have to ask her to forgive me constantly. Constantly. Because I am not this. By God's grace, I am headed in that direction. I am not this perfection. But gang, look for the perfection. Make sure you marry somebody committed to that direction. Are you committed to the gentleness, peace, good, kindness, love, etc.? Or are you just going to be satisfied with the other? That's what she's saying in verse 3. Look at verse 4. He has brought me, you're going to like this one. He has brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. This is great. What she is saying is this guy brings me into the place where all his friends gather. And when I go in there, there is not a discrepancy from what happened in the private to what happens in public. He treats me the same around his friends as he treats me when he is alone. What this is not a little pennant that he puts up over his bed. This is the banner that they used to hold up when armies would go and fight together. And it would become time to regroup. They'd have two guys would hold up this banner, whoever how many would take, and they'd hold it up. And it'd be a huge banner that would stick out on a battlefield, and everybody would know where to regroup, and everybody would know where to regather based on this banner. And what she is saying is the way that this guy treats me opens doors for me, talks sensitively to me, walks beside me and not ahead of me. His banner over me is love, and there is no one that doubts the way this guy feels about me. He doesn't whisper, I love you, I need you, I want to be with you, and when his buddies are around, go get the chips. All right? He doesn't say, well, you know, can't you just do something with the girls today? The big game's on. You know, and then when she leaves the room, going, yeah, I own her. All right. That's not what's happening. His banner over me is love, and everybody sees it. I am embarrassed when I read that verse. I am embarrassed. I this is more a testimony to Alex's incredible patience with me than it is my living up to this standard. But, you know, that is my challenge, guys. That is your challenge. And that is your challenge, guys, to your guy friends and girls to your girlfriends. Is your banner over your friendship love? Or is it inconsistency? Is it unfaithfulness? Is it backstabbing? Or is it consistent? There is no doubt that this guy and this guy love each other. It is consistent, faithful friendship. And you do not cross that person in front of me. Because I have made a covenant with them like David made with Jonathan. And to curse his name is to curse mine. And there is no inconsistency thereof. This woman knew she was loved. Girls, would that not feel good to say when you're with a guy that his banner over me is love? When people look at me, there's a big banner that says, this guy loves me. Would that make you feel good? I think the answer is yes. Look at verse 5. This is where it gets kind of good. Sustain me with raisin cakes. Refresh me with apples because I am lovesick. Now, let me show you guys. Be careful with this. And girls, listen. If some guys pick up on this, and there are some secular guys that can clue into this, and do use this and manipulate this for their own selfish pleasure. So listen, if you treat a girl like this, guys, if you love her and are tender towards her and encourage her and build her up and speak sweet things to her and put a banner over her that is love, this book tells you how the way she's going to respond. She is going to say, sustain me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples because I am lovesick. Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. Now, just for a minute, in your little fraternity and sorority minds, flash back and think about what she's saying. Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. What is she asking for? That is one of the most passionate positions that a couple can lay in. If you put the woman down prostrate and that man puts his left hand under her head, his right hand is free to please her. And she's saying, let us get together like this. it gets worse. Before she wants to be in that position, she says, give me some well-known aphrodisiacs. Raisin cakes and apples were things that were used in many of the pagan fertility rite rituals of the day. Little sidebar here. And we got to do this just to kind of tell you what she's doing. And I want to tell you and protect the integrity of this woman, okay? Because she's not saying, just golly, but this is what has happened, all right? This is what has happened to her. This guy has loved her so incredibly so that she's ready. I mean, that's the way she's made. This guy is he just loves me, and so, you know, I'm in love. So, gal, come on, all right? And so what she has said is, give me the raisin cakes. Give me the apples. Sustain me. I mean, I'm weary with my love. I need strength so I can do it right. That's pretty intimate. Baal worship. Baal was the storm god and the fertility god and the god of productivity. He had a sister who was a nut. And in pagan rituals, and if you look back in the Old Testament, Baal worship, and I can never, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Baal, Baal, you figure it out, all right? But this Baal worship, what they would do is they believed that since he was the god of productivity and the god of fertility, they believed that when Baal and his sister Anat, and it was called many different things. It's called Issachar. No. What was that movie that bombed? Ishtar. Thank you. Ishtar is the same as Baal in other cultures. That's right. Anyway, there's different names for Baal, but Baal and Anat would copulate. And as they would copulate, okay, they believed, now hear this, that the rain that fell was Baal's semen. And as the semen fertilized the earth, which was represented by a knot, that fruit would come forth. And what they did, and this is why Baal worship was so popular, because it was easy to get people to go to church, is they said, what you need to do is, as you worship Baal, you need to emulate that which he and a knot do. You need to come to Baal's temple, and you need to get with, since you're a mini Baal, and you produce fruit with your semen and make kids, you need to come, and you need to worship Baal by coming with the temple prostitutes, male and female, and sleeping with them. And maybe Baal will be inspired to do what you do, so it will rain and we'll have productivity and great harvest in the land. That played on two things, the people's need for food and the people's need to have an excuse to participate in their pagan lifestyle. Let me tell you where this was really a problem, is it went to the next level. They said when there was times of long periods of drought, which they would do, is they would take it and they'd say, you don't need to just emulate what Baal and Anat do. You need to sacrifice your fruit, just like you're asking Baal and Anat to copulate so that semen would hit the earth and the crops would grow, and you want him to sacrifice his fruit harvest to you. What you need to do is you need to go and have sex, and you need to give us your fruit, your child, and sacrifice him to Baal to inspire him to sacrifice his fruit to you. That's why child sacrifice was a major problem in these pagan rituals and satanic rituals of the day. One of the things that they would use in those rituals is raisin cakes and apples and other, or really apricots, which is the same word, in the pagan rituals of the day. And she was saying, man, give me, and they believed that these raisin cakes were aphrodisiacs because of the many seeds that were in them. She's saying, give me these aphrodisiac, because you have loved me in such a fewer way. These things that are used over here in an unhealthy way, give me these things in this right way so that I can love you correctly. Now, girls, let me just tell you this. There are wolves that sit here today. And guys, let me tell you, there are girls that are smart enough to do the exact same thing in reverse. But girls, there are guys that will love you and be tender and send you flowers and be nice and be sweet just long enough to get what they want. Hang in there. Get to know that character. Make sure you know that it is a direction and not just a spontaneous combustion so that he can get what he wants. Don't be fooled by just a little of this. Look for it. Make sure it is a consistent thing in his life. Because girls, guys know, we are not stupid, that when we treat you tenderly and we treat you nicely and whisper things in your ear, and you just go, Mama just doesn't know how sweet he is. No one else can just tell, this boy is so sweet to me. Careful. There are some wolves out there dressed like shepherds, so they get closer to the sheep and devour them. Let's move. I adjure you, and look at this, girls, find you a guy like this, and guys, be a guy like this. After all this happened, she just said, put me in this passionate position with you. He said, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, by that which is graceful and by that which is strong, that you will not arouse or awaken my love until it pleases. In other words, he is saying, whoa.
whoa, I mean, I'm with you. I'm tracking right there along with you. I'd like to do the same thing, but it isn't time yet. It isn't time. I'm going to be fair here because this verse can be handled in one of two ways. It could be said by Solomon, and if that's the case, I think Solomon is definitely saying, whoa. As much as I'd love to participate in that right now, it is not time. Gang, premarital sex will destroy a good relationship. You've heard it said before that sex before its time will keep you in a bad relationship longer than it should, and sex before its time will take you out of a good relationship that you don't want to get out of. It is just a fact. And I could have lots of people stand up to testify to it this morning. I adjure you, O children of Northwest Bible, to not awaken a love before its time. It is important. I mean, people are going to respond like this when you get ready to love. But wait. Wait, because God intends for you to have a wonderful time with sex. Sex is not a bad thing. It is a great thing, but it needs to be used in the great, right way that God created it, intended to be used in. In fact, you'll see in chapter 5 in a little bit where God, I believe, is watching the lovers having sex, and he said, dig in when they're married. God is not embarrassed by sex. He gave it to us. But wait and use it. It could also be said by a woman. Now, if the woman said it here to her friends, what she is saying, do not sacrifice for something less. Don't wait for something less. Hold on and wait for God to love you like Solomon is loving me. Don't force love. Don't go out there and fish it up when it's not really there. Don't create love before it's time. When it's time, you'll know it. You ever heard that stupid question? How do you know you're in love? You just know it. Don't you hate that answer? All right? That's kind of what if the woman's saying it, that's what she's saying. You'll know it. I mean, you just know it. Why? Because fireworks are going off everywhere and you just, you know, walking in Disneyland no matter where you are. All right? Let me give you a little word picture. Two of them. If you awaken love before it's time, sex is a good thing, and you do need to know that God invented sex. It was not invented by Satan. We, some of us have grown up with the idea that if it is sexual, it is bad, and that is not the case. Sex is something which is good. It is necessary for a healthy relationship. It is like you need heat to warm a house, and you need a fireplace, and you need a wood stove that will heat the entire house. But let me ask you this. Those of you who have a fireplace in your house, what is around that fireplace? It is not typically in the middle of the den. You just bring some wood in and throw it down and get a big, oh, that's a big flame, right, Ma? All right? That's not what's going on. You put that fireplace in your house and you put bricks all around it and you put mortar around it, you put iron around it and you put a gate in front of it. It is a good thing, but it has to be kept where? In its place. Fire has its place and it should not be taken out. You drag that fire out of its place and put it in the middle of the living room and you got big time problems. You're going to lose your home. That which is valuable to you will be destroyed by the one thing which is to complement that which is valuable to you. Another one. They talk about how their love is like a flower that's about to blossom. And that's what a marriage should be. It should be a continually blossoming flower. If you force love before it's time, you ever done that? You get some roses, girls, and you try and make that thing bloom before it's time, what's going to happen? You get something in there and start to spread it out, you're going to damage some of the very delicate petals that are all around that flower. If you want that flower to bloom, you've got to let it bloom in its time. You need to nurture it and let it be and wait. And when it's time to blossom on its wedding night, poof, it is beautiful. So gang, keep your flower closed while it needs to be closed. And keep your fire in its place or you'll destroy your house. I adjure you, I beg you urgently, is the good translation of that, to wait until it's time. They understand. Do you think these people understand passion? Absolutely. But they also understand the danger of passion out of control. All right. And here it goes. They're kind of attracted. They've kind of run through the first cycle. And now we're going to see, and we're going to move through this part a little bit because we see some of the same things again. This is kind of what happened. Now, they have been attracted, and they're going on a date. All right? They're going to spend some time together. And so in verse 8, listen, my beloved, behold, he is coming, climbing on the mountains, leaping on the hills. He's just kind of like a little fairy, just bouncing along. She sees him coming, and she's looking at her little castle, and here he comes. And you see the way she's just like a fairy tale, and she's all excited. He's just bouncing along the hills like a stud, like a young stag. He is coming like a stud. All right, there it is. Behold, he is standing behind our walls, the vision of a guy rushing up to this big, beautiful house, this castle with a wall, and he's kind of jumping around, looking over the side, like, where's my beloved? He's kind of walking around like this. He is looking through the windows, and he gets through the gate, and he runs inside, and he's so anxious, he forgot the knock on the door, he just was looking in the glass to see if she's in there. I am so in love, where is she? Is she inside? And then he looks through the lattice in the garden to see if she's in there. I mean, the guy is a raving idiot, alright? It's basically what has gone on here. Alright? That is basically the translation of what's happening. My beloved responded and said to me, "Arise, my darling, my beautiful one." This is the woman riding. This is her vision of the date. Here it comes. My beloved responded and said to me, "Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. For behold, the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. The flowers have already appeared in the land. The time has arrived for pruning the vines, and the voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land." Let me ask you a question. What season is she using to describe spring? There's the answer. Well, doggone it, you know. Like some of you were going to say, dead of winter time, you know. Spring, all right. I mean, you know that, I know that. Well, that was the point, all right. So anyway, spring. Their love is like spring, all right. New love brings new life. You ever been there? I hated high school. I mean, I hated it different times. But when I had a crush, I'd get up about 6:30, you know. Other days it'd be about 8:25, like an 8:30 class. But when you were in love, when you had a crush, every day is just, you just stare at the clock so that you can get to school and see, you know, whoever her name is. Or whoever his name is. And you just can't believe how exciting algebra is going to be at 8:30 this morning because she's in that class. And it is like, man, I am just excited to go to school today, Mom. It's going to be, you know, are you burnt the toast? Who cares, Mom? And it's like, what has happened to you? Well, the answer is the brother is in love. And he sees the fact that, boy, he is excited. And when they see new love, it is like a new life. And you are so excited. And that is the way it ought to be. That's a good thing. It's like that George Strait song. You ever seen somebody who was just kind of normal for a while? You know, and then all of a sudden they fell in love and they just blossomed and they became a new person. George is writing to his old girlfriend. He said, "You look so good in love, man." He must have stole from stars in the sky and whatever it is, the words, and sprinkled some dust in your eyes. You look, I butchered that one, but you look so good in love. That's the point, man. You can take an ordinary girl and it's like, you know, what happened to her? Tell you what happened to her. A shepherd king started to love her, and she has blossomed, and it is a new life, and everyone can see it. Okay, the fig has ripened. The fig tree has ripened its figs, and the vines in blossom have given forth their fragrance. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. And he's just dancing around in the garden. He's out there doing it, you know, if they had little white coats that have slapped on him and thrown him in a place. He's all cranked up. Here we go, verse 14. "O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet, and your form is lovely." You guys ever been out in the wilderness and you see a bird that kind of is flying along and all of a sudden it's just this sheer rock wall and it just goes, poof, it's gone. You go, what in the world does that sucker go? I mean, you look up there at that wall, it's like an eagle and you just, it is nested up there in a high bluff and you go, where's that thing hiding? Where did that dove specifically, it's like a dove that flies into a crevice that's about this big and hides in the crags of the rocks. And you kind of look and go, golly doggone. Now, a dove is in there because it's scared. And that dove is not going to come out because they think you're going to hurt it. And this guy wants to be alone. He wants to woo her out like a dove that's hiding in a rock and get to know her intimately. And he's begging her to just come out from that which she protects herself with, her innermost secrets, and to share them with her. He wants to spend time alone. He has the vision of being out away, isolated from everybody else. And when you're in love, you cannot get enough time alone. You know, one of the biggest problems that happens is people date like this and they get married and they stop pursuing this type of time. They stop pursuing running away and hiding together in places that nobody can bother them. And the guy stops asking the girl intimate questions about her to let her share her deepest feelings. And the girl stops wanting to share because the guy is not a tender wooer of her love, but just kind of someone who's begun to expect it. Man, I'm telling you, it is work to woo a dove out of a sheer cliff of rock because it's scared. But this guy says, "I am in love with you and I will stay there and patiently woo you out in order to love you correctly." And that's what he's doing right here. You ever been in love too when you just kind of, the phone rings and you can't wait to hear that voice and their voice is sweet? The point is the writer is trying to let you see how in love these people are. Your voice is sweet. I mean, I could just sit there, you could read the yellow pages and I'd go, oh, that's the way you enunciate Smith is incredible, you know? I mean, it's just absolutely spectacular. Would you just read that zip code one more time, all right? It's kind of what's going on here. They're in love, I'd say. Look at verse 15. All right. Catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyards while our vineyards are in blossom. This is a great verse. This is a verse like the rest of them haven't been, right? This verse is talking about the problems that are going to come up in the relationship. When a vineyard is in bloom, when it's in blossom, when there are things that are going on, there are going to be predators that try and ruin the productivity of this vineyard that is blossoming. Those predators were called foxes then. And what they were saying is, we've got to catch the foxes that are going to eat from that which is blossoming and destroy the productivity of our relationship. Gang, there are things in relationships, and again, not just guy-girl, but specifically that's what's going on here. There are things in your relationships with others that will destroy the productivity of your union, the productivity of your vineyard. There's selfishness. There is jealousy. There is pride that will not admit wrong. There is the guilt of premarital sex, which will drive a wedge right between you. There are foxes that will come into your vineyard that if you don't have both people committed to keeping them out of your vineyard, it will ruin your productivity. It will ruin that which you have nourished and brought along and is blossoming. They will eat the flowers and destroy them and leave. And what the man, I think, is saying is, in fact, the NIV, I think, does a better job than NAS here, where it says, let us. I think the man is saying, let the two of us. Isn't that what the NIV says? I hope it does. If not, just pretend with me that it does. But what he's saying is, let us both work together to eliminate these things from being a problem. There are going to be problems in a relationship. That's why I said you cannot expect that even in this divine, perfect relationship, they knew that there were problems that would creep in, problems of insecurity, problems of suspicion, problems of lack of trust, and other ones that we have mentioned. And if you don't work to keep those things out, it will destroy your relationship. This is a lie. If you guys believe that a relationship is one without conflict, you are being deceived. If you think, I must have blown it because I am in this with a person that I thought I loved, and now we're starting to hit heads, boy, I've really blown it, I need to get out of it, that is a lie. Every relationship is going to have conflict. Let me tell you what I heard. The best advice I heard in my premarital counseling was this. A guy said to me, he said, Todd, let me tell you something. This compatibility stuff, where you're strong in this area and she's strong in this area, you both have likes and likes, it's a bunch of trash. I mean, it's good to share and know what each other likes, but what makes two people compatible is holiness. When you get two sinners that are together, there is going to be conflict. And the only way to get two sinners that are conflicting like this, the only way to get them to really have a happy marriage is when they both pursue holiness. And you meet right here at the top. And that's why a good relationship looks like that. It's a holy trinity. It is the man, the woman, and Jesus. That is what marriage is supposed to represent, the holy trinity, the love of God. And when you get those three together, you're going to have a good blend. You're going to get rid of those foxes. Folks, you want to be compatible? You be holy. You be loving, kind, peaceful, patient, kindness. The only way to do that is with Jesus. That is the underlying enabler in this story, is a commitment to walk with God. So, chase those foxes out of your relationship, the foxes of sin. Look at verse 16. We're going to stop at chapter 3. The woman responds and says this, "My beloved is mine, and I am his. He pastures his flock among the lilies." Do you hear what she says when he responds this way? When he says, I am committed to working out the problems in our relationship, she rejoices and comes out anew, and she says, I am assured of his commitment to me. I am now resting in the fact that I am married to a shepherd that pastures his flock among the lilies. A gentle shepherd that goes to such extreme effort that he will take his sheep and he will lead them into a shepherd where there are lilies so that they can lay down and be comforted. That is the sign of a strong and caring man. And she is saying, that is what my beloved is. He is a guy that will be committed to taking me and leading me into pastures that are green, pastures that are soft, and he will protect me and care for me. because he is committed, as I am committed, to not let the foxes destroy our vineyard. Until the cool of the day, here she goes again. Until the cool of the day, as the shadows fleet away, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. Now, I've got to tell you what this means. Until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away is morning, okay? When the darkness leaves and there's no, the darkness leaves and there's light that comes in and takes away the shadows, that is morning, that is dawn. She's saying, until dawn, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle, a strong, graceful animal, or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. Now you're asking yourself, what do you think she's saying there? Is she saying what I'm thinking I'm saying? Is she talking about the mountains of Bether? Is she talking about, I think that some Bibles say, the mountains of separation? Is that correct? Some of y'all have that in front of you? The mountains of separation, there is no geographical region in Israel or in their region that really fits the description here. Everybody agrees that what she is talking about is because, again, of his tremendous love for her, his commitment to her, his ability to give her assurance. What she is saying is, beloved, I want to take you and I want to bury you in my chest all night long. And this is a reference to the woman's breast. And again, it is the idea that she wants to embrace this guy because she loves him so much, and just that he can just bury his head in the mountains of Bether. Now some of you guys are thinking, boy, that's good, Ty. You'll preach a couple weeks on that. Just do a series on the mountains of Bether, you know? No, I'm not going to do that. But that's exactly what she's saying. All right? In the relationship, as you feel yourself becoming more and more attracted to another person, you will start to want those things, and it is natural. But don't fall into the lie that to repress your desires is bad. It is right to repress them until their time. What happens in chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, is she has a bad dream. And she thinks about the fact that the wedding day is now very close, and just like many of you get anxious about a big basketball game or a big football game before it comes, you're worried, am I going to remember to bring my shorts? And, you know, the wedding's here. Have I got the flowers ordered? Have I got all this ordered? Is everything okay? She has this dream. Does he still love me? I mean, is it really the right thing to do? She's kind of walking around. She's nervous. And so she wakes up and she runs out in the street and she starts asking people, have you seen my beloved? Like they're going to know who her beloved is, but she's so in love. She thinks, surely everybody knows that we're in love. And, you know, have you seen this guy? And they go, are you crazy? And she finds him and she embraces him and she will not let him go. And she drags him back to Mama's house where it's good and safe and she knows that nothing's going to happen. And she says, I want you to come inside my mother's bedroom, chapter 3, verse 4, and stay with me tonight. And he responds in verse 5 the exact same way he did in verse 8. And he says, woman, relax. I am so thankful that you want me to rest in the mountains of Bether. I'm coming. I'll be coming around the mountain at the right time. All right? And he's saying, I am so glad. All right? I am so glad that you want me to come and spend the night with you in your mother's open. You know? But she's saying in chapter 3, verse 5, I beg you by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field that you will not arouse or awaken love until it's time. Let's not let this fire destroy our house. Let's not crush the flower by prying back the petals. I will wait until it's time. And wait they did. There's a pattern of expectation, of longing, of patience, of frustration, of reward. You see it in chapter 1 through chapter 2, and then again chapter 2 to chapter 3, and the reward now has increased until next week when we come in chapter 3, verse 6, the marriage starts. And we'll take a look at the marriage and maybe even nudge into the honeymoon, all right, next week. But what she has done is she has said, I beg you to come and lie with me. And twice this godly, gentle shepherd says, I care more for you than I do for me, and we will wait. And I adjure you to wait. Wait for the love that is right, like the bride would say to her maidens, and wait for the time that is right, like this godly man said to this woman. Next week we'll start at chapter 3, verse 6. Let's pray. Lord, I really thank you just for the opportunity we have to hold up your standard of love. And I am just convicted with how good that standard is. And I just ask your forgiveness for me personally as a guy who's trying to attain to that standard in his own marriage. I confess my shortcomings. I lift up to you and I thank you for the grace that you have bestowed upon my wife. I would pray for the ability to shower over her a banner of love. Likewise, for my friends here that pray with me, Lord, I pray for their ability to shower over each other as we open our eyes now a banner of love. And that includes the guy that's sitting next to a guy and the girl that's sitting next to a girl. May people see in this room that is way too big to be intimate. May they see people in here that seek out the intimate parts of another person's life, that they desire to listen, that we would woo each other out of the cracks that we hide ourselves in, because there's love that awaits them. May people see in this room a commitment to not let foxes destroy the productivity of fellowship. May we work with each other to say, I was prideful towards you. I sinned towards you because I was jealous of the way that God gifted you. May we eliminate those things from the fellowship here at Northwest Bible so that all people everywhere would be attracted to the marriage of believers here at this church. Lord, help us to be like apple trees in the middle of a forest. Help us to be people that bring forth good fruit that is sweet to all who taste it. We need your help. We cannot do this on our own. We confess our lack of perfection, and we thank you for the Holy Spirit, which enables us in our pursuing the right direction. Thanks for this time. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen.